Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is special coverage from WBUR in Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. In the days before September 11th, the United States was on the verge of a major immigration policy overhaul. In the works, massive amnesty proposals, new cooperation between Mexico and the United States, and a kinder, gentler INS. On September 6th, Mexican President Vicente Fox met with Bush administration leaders, and all systems seemed go for a deal giving undocumented immigrant workers in the U.S. amnesty and legal status. President Bush announced that a new policy would be a top priority for the upcoming months.
He's asked that we do it within the year. One thing he'll find is we will put 100% effort into during the year, and I hope we can come up with a solution. I want to accommodate my friend. He's got a very important role to play, and that is as a spokesman for Mexican nationals living in this country, as someone who's deeply concerned about their future, their lives, and I completely understand that.
But where do those reforms stand now, after September 11th? I spoke earlier with Steve Camarada. He's research director at the Center for Immigration Studies, a nonprofit think tank in Washington. I asked him about the impact of 9/11 on Washington's immigration reforms.
President Fox was here and talked with President Bush about the possibility of having a guest worker program or some form of amnesty, meaning green cards for illegal aliens in the United States, at least from Mexico, and there was even talk of expanding that to other groups. President Bush indicated his desire at that time. It was clear that the White House supported some form of legalization.
And what's happened to that entire initiative?
Clearly, it's on the back burner now. Any proposal to give green cards to illegal aliens becomes much less politically possible, given the fact that several of the people who perpetrated the attacks of September 11th were also illegal aliens.
Mm-hmm. So the biggest green card kind of amnesty in a long time has been put on the back burner. What other effects have there been of September 11th on immigration policy so far, or new things in the works, Steve Camarada, that would tighten up on immigration policy?
What we're seeing is a lot of proposals in Congress for a more tightly controlled border, both north and south, but specifically focusing on the northern border. In addition to that, what we have in Congress right now are a lot of proposals for a more carefully controlled visa issuance system. That is, a more extensive background checks, better coordination between federal agencies in terms of sharing information on who's a potential terrorist. At present, the INS and the CIA really don't share much information. The hope is now that they will. We're also seeing the proposals for what's called an entry-exit or a check-in, check-out system. At present, although it may surprise people, we don't keep very good track of who arrives in the United States, and we keep even worse track of who leaves. So
people fill out those little white slips on the incoming flights, but what, those just have gone in shoe boxes at the Immigration Department?
It's not quite that bad. They do try to enter them, but unfortunately, the airlines don't collect them on a regular basis or properly. They're not issued exactly properly. No one checks when they're collected if they're even filled out properly, so that there is a great deal of incomplete information on them.
How has the mood on Capitol Hill toward immigrants shifted since September 11th?
The way I would describe it is that prior to September 11th, there was a lot of folks on Capitol Hill and elsewhere who had increasingly come to see America's borders as simply an obstacle to be overcome by businesses and travelers. But I think there's an increased recognition now that the borders are, in fact, not obsolete, and they are a critical tool for protecting and promoting America's national interest. And I think to that extent, that's probably a positive development. It's unfortunate that it took an event like this to bring that home, but nonetheless, that does seem to be the case now, that people recognize how important our borders really are.
How many illegal aliens are in the U.S. right now? How do they enter the country, and what do most of them do?
Yeah, we think that there are about 8 million illegal aliens total in the United States as of 2000. We think that about 60% of them are people who snuck across the border, primarily the southern border. And in addition to that, we think about 40% are people who come on temporary visas, tourists and students and so forth, and who overstay their visas. So maybe 3 million are those overstays. The biggest country, we think roughly half or a little more than half, are from Mexico. And we think that this number is growing by something like 500,000 a year.
The whole issue of how to look at these immigrants is, of course, a very political one. American labor unions, AFL-CIO and others, have recently embraced these immigrants as an important part of the workforce in the U.S. How important are illegal immigrants to the American economy?
The economic impact of immigration in general and illegal immigrants in particular is a very hotly discussed issue. In general, though, economists who look at the issue generally find that it's not a boon or a bust to the U.S. economy. The primary effect of immigration, especially illegal immigration, is that it tends to hold down wages at the bottom of the labor market. Not so much because illegals come in and work for less, though that does happen, but rather it's just because you're dramatically increasing the supply of less educated workers. And so this has benefits. It means that your price of a head of lettuce is cheaper, or you can get your roof fixed on your house cheaper, but it also tends to come at the expense of America's lowest paid workers. And since they don't make very much to begin with, any downward effect on their wages doesn't really result in a big boon to consumers in the form of savings, because they don't account for anything in terms of overall economic output.
But who's going to pick the lettuce and the tomatoes and do the other kinds of work that illegal aliens have often done recently? The economy in some key portions does rest on this labor, doesn't it?
Well, in general, the way economics works is if we had less unskilled immigrant labor, a couple things would happen. Wages would generally rise, and one might argue that's a good thing. Farm workers don't make much to begin with. Then there's lots of legal immigrants who work in that field. But in addition to that, what generally happens is you get what's called the substitution of capital for labor. Farmers would say, well, I have to pay these workers more, so I'm going to buy the machine to pick the head of lettuce. And that's why you're seeing that even now. You see bagged lettuce. That's done by a machine. You just eliminate the job altogether. In Australia, where they don't have a lot of illegal aliens, unskilled immigrants coming in to pick their fruit and so forth, they have a very vibrant agricultural sector, but they simply practice what's called dried-on-the-vine agriculture, or they have machines that do the harvesting, and that's all we would see here. Because, again, illegals provide such a tiny fraction of economic output in the United States because they're employed in that low-wage sector that any disruption to the U.S. economy would be minimal, and the benefit might be that we'd have our low-wage workers make somewhat more money, and many people would regard that as a positive development.
Steve Camarada, I see you're in a very different perspective from Mexican President Vicente Fox, or even President Bush only a couple of months ago.
Yes, I think that President Vicente Fox certainly represents the interests of Mexico well. Mexico has had difficulty finding work for a significant share of its population and thus has encouraged or at least tolerated them coming north. So quite naturally, he'd like to look out for their interests here and make sure that that flow can continue if Mexico can't find work for them there. Otherwise, discontent would build in Mexico. As for U.S. President Bush, I suspect that it's not an issue he's all that engaged on, and although he may speak a good deal about it, the underlying economics of it is probably not something that he's examined very closely. But when people do look at it closely, illegal immigration doesn't look like such a great deal for the country, partly because people with little education don't make much money and thus don't pay a lot in taxes, but tend to use a lot in services. That's another important part of this debate, and it doesn't seem as though the administration has been very aware of those facts.
Steve Camarada is research director at the Center for Immigration Studies. He spoke to us from Washington. The crackdown on illegal workers in America goes past New York City and beyond tighter border controls or stricter travel checks. Just yesterday in Salt Lake City, the federal government announced indictments of 69 workers, most of them immigrants, at Salt Lake International Airport. The charge, using false information or documents to get security passes for their jobs. Does it matter? Does the United States have an economic need or moral obligation to acknowledge its millions of undocumented workers? Is this the time to crack down and deport, or, as President Bush until recently was planning, pull these workers deeper into the fold? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. To talk about the situation of undocumented workers post-September 11th, we're joined in the studio by Ruben Martinez. He's a journalist who's studied the migration of workers to and from Mexico. His most recent book is Crossing Over, A Mexican Family on the Migrant Trail. Thanks for joining us, Ruben Martinez.
It's my pleasure to be here.
We're also joined from the studios of Vermont Public Radio by our own special coverage news analyst, Jack Beattie, a senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
Ruben Martinez, you heard Stephen Camarada's depiction of the immigrant scene, and he's essentially saying that, well, if 9/11 means we tighten up on illegal immigration, so much the better. These migrants don't do much on balance for the U.S. economy, and we're probably better off without them. Do you see that attitude growing since 9/11? Just last summer, we saw a very different tune coming out of the White House.
Oh, clearly. I mean, it's from day to night or night to day. Right before September 11th, as was noted here, we were talking about a major overhaul of immigration policy in this country. It would have been the first major overhaul since 1986. We had a minor tune-up in during the Clinton years. But we were talking about basically bringing immigration policy into with the times that we live in, global times, in many ways borderless times. And it was a curious situation in which the White House, in some ways, was playing more progressive on the immigration issue than the Clinton administration had. But, of course, after September 11th, the talk is about tightening borders, is about controlling borders, is about intelligence gathering on the borders, deploying more technology and more manpower on the border. And unfortunately, there's not much of a debate about this. Like, there's not a debate about a lot of things these days, unfortunately, I think, in the wake of the 11th.
But the needle in the haystack of illegal immigration is a very sharp one that brought down the World Trade Center, hit the Pentagon, hit Pennsylvania. And, of course, people are very, very upset about that and very much more tuned with security consciousness. I guess what you're doing is pointing at the haystack and saying, hey, that's been a productive part of the economy.
Indeed. There's one thing that Stephen Camarada from the Center for Immigration Studies and I would agree on. People to the right or to the left or just on different sides of this issue will all agree that the policy we have now is a wreck, that it was a wreck even before the 11th. People on the right and the left think it was a hypocritical policy, that just didn't recognize the reality. My point here is that in the wake of September 11th, by pointing at undocumented workers by saying we've got to, you know, send them all back where they came from, we've got to tighten our borders, we're barking up the wrong tree. Our security problem are not guys crossing the border with rakes and leaf blowers. Those are not terrorists. I'm very troubled by the news from Salt Lake City. On the face of it, it looks like our Justice Department is going out and providing more security for us. We all want that. But I read the story here, and I see that most of the workers were Central Americans. Now, the last time I checked, we weren't fearing any threat of terrorism from Central Salvadorans, Guatemalans.
It's also a remarkable demonstration of how deeply integrated these workers are into the economy. They x-ray their, so to speak, their airport staff, and a huge portion of them turn out not to have their papers in order. Jack Beattie, join us here. How does this picture look to you? Do you think it's right to sweep the illegal immigrants out along with the hunt for terrorists?
Well, I don't know, but it will have consequences. I mean, the illegal immigration here is a kind of safety valve for Mexico. Mm-hmm. Our border with Mexico is, I think, the only border in the world where there's a first world nation and a third world nation. And the magnetic pull of the North on Mexico is just part not only of their economy, but almost of their survival. So anything that cracks down even on illegal immigration can have repercussions there that aren't, we just don't know what they would be. But on the other side, of course, as Steve Camarada pointed out, the lowest wage Americans are those who are hurt by immigration. George Borges, an economist at Harvard, Cuban-American economist, notes that the wage gap between high school dropouts and graduates went up from 30% in 1980 to 41% in 1995. He says about half of that 20% of that difference, 50% of that difference is made up of the competition for low-wage work that our high school dropouts, mostly inner-city teens, face. So what may be a loss for Mexico would certainly be a gain for our native-born workers and often really our African-American young men who, not because wages are necessarily bid down by new immigrants, but because the supply so far exceeds the demand.
We're talking about illegal immigrants, undocumented workers in a time of crackdown on immigration. What do you think of the whole picture? The country was just about to have a major change before 9/11. Now we're swinging back the other way. Does the United States have an economic need to embrace its millions of undocumented workers? Or would it be better off without them? Does the U.S. have a moral obligation here? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to special coverage from WBUR Boston. This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about U.S. immigration policy in the wake of 9/11. It's turned on a dime. It was headed toward a big amnesty. Now it's going the other way. What do you think? Is a crackdown on illegal immigrants vital after September 11th? Is it practical? Is it humane? We're joined tonight by Ruben Martinez. His most recent book was Crossing Over, a Mexican Family on the Migrant Trail. He's a journalist who's covered the migrants from Mexico in particular very closely. We're also with our news analyst, Jack Beatty. Ruben Martinez, put a human face on this for us. You've been lauded up one side and down the other for your book, Crossing Over. You're lauded as the James Agee and John Steinbeck of the Mexican immigrant story. What had you seen before 9/11, and what have you heard since 9/11 about the impact of this national trauma on our illegal residents?
I had there was a family that I followed for a period of 4 years in their odyssey crossing the border. They went through every obstacle you can possibly imagine, including losing three brothers in a horrific car crash that resulted from a border patrol chase in Southern California. And I know this family to this day. They live and work in St. Louis, Missouri, which in itself is a story. A lot of people don't know there's Mexicans in St. Louis, Missouri, or Manhattan, and practically everywhere else in the country. I had a conversation with a member of this family right before the 11th. He called me up. I could hear the TV roaring in the background, CNN in Spanish. And he says, what do you think? Are we going to get an amnesty? That's what they're saying. And that was the buzz in the migrant community. And I said, well, it's looking good. He called me a couple days after the 11th, and he said, we're not going to get it, are we? I mean, the community is very well aware of what's going on. They're tuned in Mexico. They're tuned in on this side of the border. Right. And it's had a dramatic impact on people's lives, the way they move. A lot of migrants, once they would cross the border, this migrant family is a classic example. They would cross the border illegally, get to San Diego, come up to Los Angeles, take a Southwest Airlines flight to St. Louis, Missouri. Cheapest travel. The Southwest Airlines is apparently the
cheaper than hitchhiking.
And faster than Greyhound. But they don't travel. A lot of undocumented workers do not travel. Most do not travel by plane domestically anymore, because many have false documents. They're scared of getting pulled over.
The movement is changing.
The line.
Ruben Martinez, stand by. I want to bring into our conversation now, if I could, Brother Yoel Magallan. He's a Jesuit missionary and director of the Association Tepeyac, an agency that works with Twin Towers victims in New York City. Good evening, Brother Yoel.
Good evening. How are you, everybody?
We're well. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for your invitation.
Well, we have heard the stories of undocumented workers who were part of the September 11th tragedy in New York who have not had access to most of the relief efforts there. Have you seen that? Is it a problem? And what's happening with these workers and their families?
Okay. Basically, the undocumented immigrants in the United States, they are working in different places. In New York, basically, they are working in the restaurant area, hotels, cafes, bars, all those kind of businesses. But basically, they are out of the books. So these people who were at the World Trade Center, also around the World Trade Center, they were working there for many years, and there are no proofs that they were working over there.
So they don't have access because they can't prove that they were employees or relatives of employees at the World Trade Center.
That is a big problem for them. And basically, the key person who could help us could be the employer who was hiring somebody in that business. And he or she could say, I was hiding this guy for many years or for some years. But basically, the INS department was saying to the immigrants, please don't be afraid and go forward to get some assistance. But they didn't say that to the employers. They didn't say that employers could have a kind of amnesty because they were hiring undocumented immigrants for many years. So they are...
They don't want to come forward.
Sure.
Technically, aren't even illegal workers eligible for emergency aid?
Basically, those people who have some children who were born in the United States, they can get some assistance from the federal emergency assistance. So only those people who have children who were born here can get some help. Other people who were affected for the World Trade Center can get help from the Red Cross, but there were a lot of problems to get assistance from them because it's the same problem. They cannot get any proof. They don't have any letter. They don't have photo ID. They don't have Social Security. They don't have any paper to prove that they were working over there. So basically the Tepeyac Association was trying to get together those workers who were affected, those families who were affected, and through the workers, we got some witnesses to say, I know this guy who was working here. I knew this guy who is missing or is dead. So through those kind of ways, we were trying to get some help for the families and those people who lost their jobs.
Mm. Ruben Martinez, it's the old story, isn't it? When the chips are down, no one is necessarily standing up for the undocumented worker. And the question is always, what do we think of that? I mean, does it mean they would have been better off not to be there in those jobs in the first place, or are we ducking some kind of moral obligation? Mm-hmm. What stories have you heard from New York?
Many of the situations that Brother Joel was talking about, I witnessed myself there at his community-based organization, and it's like a Kafkaesque nightmare. These are people who came to this country following the American dream that all immigrants throughout American history have followed. They're there working. After September 11th, they're out on the street. Some of them were killed. Family members are trying to prove they existed, and they can't even prove that these people worked or lived in New York City. It's a terrible, terrible situation. And it points up once again the situation where, wait a second, can't we come up with some sort of immigration policy that recognizes the contribution that these workers are making? Stephen Camaradas earlier said, well, the numbers don't look so good. They might not be contributing that much. But look at how we're served by immigrants in so many ways. Mm-hmm. The nannies, the farm workers.
So many ways. Brother Joel, in New York, what kind of numbers are we talking about of people who were affected by the 9/11 the tragedy in the community that you're serving?
I think we lost hundreds of undocumented immigrants at the World Trade Center. A lot of delivery boys, people who were working in restaurants, hotels, and those people. But we are now having a problem with those people who lost their jobs. There are thousands of people who cannot get any assistance. And, people who are citizens, they can go to the unemployment office and get some help. But those people who are here without documents, they are not eligible to do it.
Brother Joel Magallan, we want to thank you for joining us tonight.
I would like to say something else.
Please.
Last week, the AFL-CIO made a resolution to support the general amnesty now.
Yes.
So they want to start once again this fight for the permanent residency for those workers who are in the same situation. So we're not talking about what is going on with these people who were affected for the World Trade Center. We're talking about those people who suffer every day. They are losing in their own countries, and they are trapped in the United States. They cannot go and visit their families and come back to continue living to survive here.
We're going to be talking with some union representatives later in the hour about exactly that movement.
Wonderful. And this December 18 is the day of the immigrants. And we want to raise our hands, our voice, saying that we have to restart this fight for the permanent residency for more than 9 million undocumented immigrants in the United States who are supporting this economy, and they could buy a lot of tickets to go to their countries and make this economy better, especially for the airplanes.
Brother Joel Magallan, we wish you well in your work in New York. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot for your invitation.
Jack Beatty, join us. You're a good, empathetic soul, and you must be hearing what these workers are going through, even though, as you say, their work may knock down the wages of American workers. How do you do that calculus?
I don't really know. I think maybe the AFL-CIO gives the clue that if these workers can be organized, then any wage differential with American workers would disappear. The thought that they would take work at less wage mm-hmm. than what an American would, a native-born American would, that is because if the unorganized are organized, then wages at the bottom will rise. That really is, I think, the most important change in the whole sort of surround of the penumbra of immigration in recent years, the switch of the AFL-CIO, because that says, look, we are for the bottom dogs, whether they're from Mexico, whether they're from Watts, whether they're from Roxbury. Our job here is to organize them and to let them have a better life the way middle-class Americans through unions have had a better life. And if that dream can go on. And by the way, in Los Angeles, it's produced the miracle of the janitors, the Justice for Janitors movement that ignited that city in 1999 and created a situation. It's immortalized in a great movie called Bread and Roses mm-hmm. about how the Hispanic janitors organized. It's happened in Las Vegas where the union wage prevails. If that can happen, then the whole bottom can rise in America. And that's a real opening for hope, it seems to me, for Mexicans, for native-born Americans, and for just generally people who are at the lower end of things.
Jack Beatty, Ruben Martinez, stand by. We're going to hear a union voice in a moment, but we have a lot of callers who want to join this conversation. Let's turn to them. We're talking about illegal immigrants, undocumented workers after 9/11. Is a crackdown on illegal immigrants vital after that terrible day? Is it practical? Is it humane? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Inge is on the line. Welcome, Inge.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sure.
I just want to express my opinion. I'm a Turkish, and I'm in the United States legally, and I'm trying to arrange my papers so that I can continue to stay legally in the States and work legally. And I think this comes, the fact that President Bush is considering giving amnesty to the illegal aliens completely leaves us in the dark, or completely leaves us in the sidelines, and that we're trying everything to do everything right the legal way, but who's getting the good end of the deal? Is it really supposed to be the illegal aliens mm-hmm. that are getting the good end of the deal?
So you feel like you're playing by the rules, and you're not eager to see those who are not get a jump on you.
Well, I mean, that's right. That's right.
Ruben Martinez, Inge, thanks for this observation. Ruben Martinez, what about it? I mean, there's a lot of competition for places on this crowded old world, and for particularly in places in the United States. Inge is working by the rules, and
she deserves a break. And nobody would I would be the last person to deny her that, and her feelings are justified. But there is a big difference. I don't know if she said she was a student or not. But
no, I think she's just in line for a working visa, as far as I could tell.
Okay,
here.
But there are different places in the economy. Our labor economy is a vast, vast and complex place. And we have a historical relationship, obviously, with Mexico. We share a border there. And we have a tradition of border crossing. Mm-hmm. In many ways, the border was already had already been brought down many, many years ago. We had a guest worker program for many, many years in this country, beginning in World War II all the way through the early 60s, that recognized that there was a huge agricultural sector in this country, that needed a flow of labor back and forth across the border. And there was talk right before the 11th, a part of the immigration reform package was the idea of a new guest worker program, which used to put the fear of God into the unions. But suddenly, like Jack was mentioning a little bit earlier, the idea was, well, wait a second, maybe we can have a guest worker program where the workers have a right to organize, where they have a right to decent working conditions and higher wages.
Ruben Martinez, hold the thought. I want to check in with Bill Granfield. He's on the line with us. He's president of the Hotel Employees and Restaurant Employees Local 100 in New York City. Welcome, Bill Granfield.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
We're looking at this issue of undocumented workers and how their circumstances are changing after 9/11. How was your union affected by the September 11th attacks, Bill?
HERE Local 100 represented the workers at Windows of the World.
The restaurant at the top of World Trade Center?
Right, and 43 of our members are either missing or confirmed dead from Windows of the World. And several hundred are displaced. By that we mean their work site no longer exists.
Have you found that families of these workers who were lost in the attack have been eligible or had access to relief aid?
Speaking of the 43 families, it's an overwhelmingly immigrant group, like so much of the food service industry. And 15 of those families are undocumented. And so those undocumented families have experienced great difficulty in getting, you know, the government benefits as distinct from, you know, private charities.
And in fact, as everyone's pointed out here, the entire movement for amnesty and some kind of legal status for this kind of worker seems to have evaporated since September 11th. How do you see that fight, Bill Granfield? I know your union has been strongly in favor of liberalized laws for Mexican immigrants and others.
Yes. Now, I don't claim to any perspective because we've really been focused in on our New York situation since
September
11th. We've seen an unbelievable outpouring of concern for the victims and support for working people in general here in New York and from around the country. And it would take the rest of the program to begin to name, starting with unions, but every imaginable organization group from little leagues to, you know, to corporate lawyers. Reaching out to us and saying, we want to help the workers, the poorest of the poor, the immigrants. So while it hasn't shaped itself into a legislative proposal, I think the American people are tremendously more supportive for working people and what immigrants suffered on that day than what maybe has reached the polls so far.
But you must have felt the steamroller that's rolled over that amnesty idea. I mean, nobody's talking about it anymore. There's all the talk is about tightening up, about clamping down on the borders inside the country, more checks, and people are being fired.
Well, I mean, an effort to get rid of terrorists and clamp down on criminals is going to be supported by everyone. Let's not confuse immigrants with terrorists or criminals. The last act of terror in our country was at Oklahoma City. I'm a white male who was born in this country. I didn't feel that I was under any suspicion after that act was carried out by a group of white males from this country.
Bill Granfield, thanks very much for joining us tonight. Bill Granfield is president of the HERE Local 100 in New York City. Ruben Martinez, you hear right there, he's standing up for his crew and said that he's seen a lot of support from around the country from others who are particularly concerned about the bottom of the labor pyramid there.
Yeah, and it raises a question. It's a moral question. I mean, we have to talk in the moral sense as well here, not just numbers and in terms of economics. The idea that, for example, what are the limits of our compassion? You know, if Brother Joel Magallan had a great proposal saying, at the very least, grant amnesty to the workers that died posthumously so that their families can get relief.
There's the question. What are the limits of our compassion? You heard the union rep say there were a lot of undocumented workers who died on September 11th right alongside Americans. In some sense, were those American deaths? Call us at 1-800-423-8255 or join us online at WBUR.org and click on Special Coverage Forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to Special Coverage on WBUR Boston. This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. We're talking about the crackdown on immigration since 9/11 and what that has meant for undocumented workers in the United States, part of our economy, part of our society, but not necessarily part of the picture going forward if those who really want to crack down have their way. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. Nancy is on the line. Welcome, Nancy. You're on the air.
Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. As I'm listening to the show, I'm thinking, I'm questioning our quick connection between the terrorist attacks and illegal immigrants, because from what I remember hearing, and I could be wrong on this, but from what I remember, I think even earlier today from one of the other shows, is that the majority of the hijackers were not illegal immigrants. They were here legally. I think only three of them were here on expired visas. They were here legally, and so I'm questioning our quick judgment and our likelihood to take comfort in cracking down on illegal immigrants, where I don't think that's really where we need to be focusing. Maybe our focus should be on screening people who are coming in, actually getting track, but not necessarily on cracking down and closing our borders.
Nancy, you raise a good point. Thanks for your call. Jack Beatty, do you see a kind of a knee-jerk reaction here? Nancy's right that it's by no means the case that all these terrorists were illegal immigrants, but yet there's a kind of natural desire to bar the door when suddenly foreigners create that much death and havoc.
Yes, there is. And although we heard from Bill Granfield about the outpouring of compassion, and I certainly hope he's right about that, there are counter tendencies. The Financial Times today has an article about companies in the U.S. advertising on the web, U.S. citizens only for employees. Well, that's illegal. That's against the law.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing it. And then of course we have on our other side, we have this millionaire out there in California, Ron Uz, who financed the anti-bilingual education referendum in California. He's now got through his money, he's put the question on the ballot for 2002 in Colorado and in Massachusetts. And I'm fearful that those kinds of that in measures like that, feelings against immigrants, albeit disproportionately from the South, having nothing to do with this, I would just want to you'd want to look at something like that to see whether there was a broader anti-immigrant tide running as a result of September 11th. How these referenda do?
It sounds like the tide is running tough. Let's take another call. David is on the line. Welcome, David. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me
sure.
on. My concern is with the amount of growth in our country, the amount of population growth. The United States population grew by 32.5 million in the 1990s, which is the equivalent of four New Jerseys.
That's a lot of growth.
70% of that growth, or almost 3%, was due to immigrants and their progeny. At this rate, we're going to be adding 20 New Jerseys, 14 of them due to immigrants, by the middle of this century.
So what would you have us do, David?
I'd have us limit immigration to about 100,000 a year and establish a population policy in this country. Immigration is not the only thing that's contributing to population. And I think that we need to help our neighbor Mexico, but to help them not by taking in all their excess people, but by helping them build their country up so that the people who get left behind in Mexico don't lose out.
David, thanks for your call. Let me put it to Ruben Martinez. What about it, Ruben? David says, hey, we don't have to do this by having everyone come in to the United States. Let's push foreign aid the other way, help Mexico on its own soil.
There's no doubt that the Mexican economy needs help, and it needs help from us, and it needs help from Mexicans inside Mexico who are fighting corruption and trying to, you know, make working conditions and wages fairer and better for Mexicans so that there's not so much pressure on the border. That's absolutely true. But I'm concerned about the caller's comments vis-a-vis immigrants and their progeny as if they're breeding like rabbits. It almost sounded like there. The fact is that the percentage of the foreign-born in this country today is high, but it's not the historical high. Our historical high was in the teens and 20s. That was our great wave of immigration. Mm-hmm. I think it was 12% of the population was foreign-born. It's about 10% right now.
But
so
what do
it's
you
not
think,
historically any bigger. It's not as big as it was.
Right. And, of course, you know, most of us in on this conversation over the radio airwaves, we've all come from immigrants
Indeed.
Of one kind or another. I think you're third generation, is that right, from Mexico?
Two and a half.
Is that right?
Two and a half.
And did your family originally came legally or illegally?
My grandparents came legally as musicians, and they were on work visas in the 1920s.
I guess what I'm – in a roundabout way, what I'm getting at is, you know, how do you feel when you hear this kind of idea? This is the close the door view.
Right.
That says, you know, we don't want any more of this, essentially. 100,000 is a very small number in the context of our country, which David's proposing.
Right.
What's your gut response?
My gut response is this. I think most Americans and even liberal-minded, compassionate Americans say, look, they're breaking the law. And Americans have this thing, we are a nation of laws, mm-hmm. and we don't like it when people break the law, right? Mm-hmm. But the fact is that we point the finger at the immigrant when it's the employer that's breaking the law just as much. Where is all the complaints about that employer that's taking the obviously fake document and by the letter of the law breaking the law mm-hmm. And paying those wages that are driving down wages across the economy? So it's a complex panorama here, and there's plenty of blame to go around, but we're only pointing the finger at who, by and large, is the victim, the guys who worked at the Windows in the World restaurant.
Ruben Martinez, it's been great to have you here this evening.
It's been my pleasure.
Good talking with you. Thanks for joining us. Ruben Martinez is a journalist. His most recent book is Crossing Over, A Mexican Family on the Migrant Trail. Jack Beatty, we have shows back-to-back tonight where there's an illegal activity at the heart of it, and yet it's so much a part of economies. Heroin in our first hour and in this hour talking about immigrants, you know, very different subjects, but both realities that are hard to get away from.
Yeah, economics and economic forces, you know, make the law porous. They work around it. They work through it. That's what makes markets work. And opportunity, you know, is a lodestar for people. And in Mexico, it's driven by desperation. You know, the point that the caller made about can we improve life sufficiently in Mexico for people to stay there, that was the idea of NAFTA, mm-hmm. you know, of the trade agreement with Mexico. But, of course, it was ruled out of court that we would make the right to organize in Mexico part of that deal.
Yeah.
And that was rejected by corporate lobbying here. So, yes, it's resulted in fact, a trade imbalance with Mexico, but a steepening of inequality in Mexico because, of course, there is no right to organize, or the kinds of unions they have are sort of company unions.
And so the dynamic goes on.
And so the dynamic goes on. And who's benefiting from it? Well, it just seems like in America, it's the very wealthy who can hire maids and you know, cabinet offices who hire them and don't pay their Social Security. And then it's corporations who can hire them and so on. And it's the rest of us who pay cheaper. We don't have to pay so much for our burgers. And it's and of course, the immigrant benefits. But, you know, other Americans are hurting. And without exporting our labor standards, that's going to continue.
Jack, thanks for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online. Go to WBUR.org and click on Special Coverage Forums. Like the rest of us, Generation Y is forming its own opinion about what they've seen and heard since September 11th. Recently, a group of students at the Buckingham Brown and Nichols School, a private high school in Cambridge, Massachusetts, met to discuss the media's treatment of the events of September 11th and the war in Afghanistan. Here, the students discussed the recent adjustment to the number of people reported dead at the World Trade Center and respond to the question, does it matter that the public know the exact number and why?
I know, I just think of it as like, a lot of people died, and, you know, it was terrible. But, I mean, right now I'm thinking of it the exact same way as I did when I thought it was 6,000 people who died. It's not like I heard it was 3,000, and I said to myself, like, oh, well, it's not that bad. I mean, it's still really bad, and it's still a lot of people dying.
It does matter the number of people that died. I mean, it's still a human life. I mean, just to hear a number, it almost dehumanizes the importance of each person in there.
If they choose to come out with, like, this many people died, you know, I understand that it's really bad, no matter how many people it was, but I would like to at least have my facts straight.
All these false reports
are a lot better than some of the Arab countries, like Afghanistan, where the government totally indoctrinates the people listening to the news. I mean, I think a couple false reports here and there are a lot better than the government and people talking about how we're glorifying the events that occurred.
That's why our First Amendment is so important. I mean, freedom of press is, like, a very good right that we have, and I think the government tries to respect that to some sort. I think they probably do control what we see to some extent, but I think I don't know personally because I don't know what the government is blocking, but I have some trust in the government to, like, believe that they are following our Bill of Rights and letting us use our First Amendment.
If they're willing to drop other rights like privacy in a time of crisis, what's to say they're not changing what we see on the media? I'm saying it's a possibility.
If you're going to tell me that the news is total lies, then, like, so is everything we've been talking about.
Although we do have freedom of the press, it makes sense for the government to not want to tell people everything that's going on in Afghanistan because the government has always been secret in its military operations and such, and so they do have a duty to tell us things, but not everything that goes on, especially when it will endanger American lives.
Dad, let's move over to television for a minute. In particular, what did you think about the image of the World Trade Center coming down that were shown on television and repeated?
One of the most disturbing things about TV media as opposed to print media is that they always have something moving. And like on September 11th or September 12th, I came home and flipped on the news, and there was a reporter talking, and they just had, you know, his face, anchor, headshot, or whatever. And then all of a sudden, in the background, this little box came up, and they just looped the image of the second plane hitting the building. And in print journalism, you don't have to do that, because you have one picture in the middle of the page, and that's the image you get. You don't have to keep looping it and, like, burning it into consciousness.
I read the newspaper, and it didn't seem as real as when I watched it happen on the news. Print definitely has more information than the TV because there could be like four or five articles on the same thing. But TV has images and you can really connect those.
But after a while, I think we become desensitized. The way that I saw the World Trade Center, I saw all these images of it falling down. And it kind of reminded me of just watching movies, just the kind of these special effects. And it was almost as if it was more unreal just watching this kind of image than just reading an article about how many people died or what happened. I mean, after a point, I think these images become sort of meaningless, which is too bad.
I think it's kind of weird. I mean, like, 90% of all media is controlled by, like, 8 corporations. But at the same time, you look at newspapers, and they're newspapers. You see them as kind of unbiased. You see on TV slogans like, the war against terrorism, and, like, United We Stand and stuff. It's just, like, how can you possibly take, like, information from that when it's, like, advertising how biased it is?
Television also manipulates its viewers a lot more. I mean, if you cut to a shot of some people sobbing over their lost family members and then cut to a picture of Osama bin Laden, it's going to foster a lot of hatred towards them. And a nice thing about newspaper is that it's all laid out in written words. You can go back. You can sort through the information for yourself. It gives you time, and it's a lot less manipulative of its audience.
With the newspaper, television, and magazine, it's mostly just they're feeding information to you, and you just have the facts, but you also need to talk to people or, like, listen, maybe if you listen to a radio talk show, because you get, first of all, you get different perspectives, and you can talk with people, and through that, you can realize other things that you would have never known otherwise, and you need more than facts, because, like, if you get opinions, you can sort of put the facts into context.
I don't trust by station, personally. I trust Peter Jennings with anything that he tells me. I don't know why. It's something about him that is so human, and the way he talks to his audience is without talking down, but without talking over my head.
They are trying to bring you the truth, but then it's up to them to choose what truth they bring you. And a lot of times what they end up choosing is disasters, because, in fact, that's what people want to see, and that's what people want to read about.
Does that make them bad? Does that make it their fault?
I'm not passing a judgment on them. I think that they choose what people want to hear, and so it's really although the media does have some control, a lot of it is the American people control what they want to see.
Students from the Buckingham Brown and Nichols School in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Listeners, for a future show, we want to know about the music you've turned to since the events of September 11th, for strength, for hope, or to grieve. Email us at special@wbur.org or call and leave a message at 617-358-0059. That's 617-358-0059. Let us know what you've been listening to and why you've embraced it. Make sure you include your email address so that we can contact you for the show. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to special coverage from WBUR Boston.
This is WBUR.